Thanks so much for being with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at eyesight today. Your eyesight, and we'll talk about my eyesight, too, because I had some issues and things that I can talk about from my own experiences over the last year and a half with our guest, Dr. David Gamm, who directs the McPherson Eye Research Institute at the University of Wisconsin. He's also an associate professor in the Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Science. Clinical practice is in pediatric ophthalmology, and his research interest focuses on human retinal development and disease. So it's really, I'm really happy to have him with us today. There's also an event coming up that we want to talk about as well, and we'll get to that in just a minute. It's called Cycle for Sight. So, man, I like to bike, so I'm a cyclist, so maybe this is something I can do. We'll find out, and of course, you can call in with your questions and comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Dr. David Gamm, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be back. I had a great time last time.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Well, let's talk about Cycle for Sight right off the bat. What's Cycle for Sight all about?
So Cycle for Sight is our main fundraising drive. It accomplishes a number of important goals. I think one of the most important ones is that it allows us to connect with the folks that we're trying to serve in the state of Wisconsin. So we're dedicated to doing the cutting-edge research that will develop the treatments and cures for tomorrow and hopefully in the near future for patients that have devastating eye-based disorders and blindness. But we also, as researchers and clinicians, want to make sure that we get out into the community, let people know what we're doing, connect with them. So it really helps us in that regard. It also raises awareness for what we're doing. Oftentimes at the university, folks that are in our own backyard don't realize what type of world-class research is being done here. And then it also raises critical funds for us to support the research that we're doing on a daily basis.
And so where does the Cycle for Sight take place, and what's it all about?
So there are four locations. The three main locations are the Princeton Club, which have been wonderful sponsors for us, mm-hmm. and then the SURF and the NAT here on campus. Mm-hmm. And it takes place on March 12th, starting at 8 a.m., going to 1 p.m. And generally you sign up for a one-hour ride, and you go at your own pace, all ages, all abilities. If you've never been on a stationary bike before, you're welcome to do that. It's indoors. It's a chance to get your heart rate up in the middle of the winter and do it for a good cause.
Yeah, I enjoy that, getting on a stationary bike and going. Usually don't go for quite an hour, but usually around 45 or 50 minutes, you get a good sweat up. And
an hour's pushing it for me too, Larry, I gotta say. But I do it every year, and it's wonderful. I just look around and I see all the folks that are pumping away, raising awareness and funds for what we do, and it really is gratifying, and it's been a great event. We've grown every year over the last 5 years.
Well, what are the most common, take a look at vision problems, what are the most common vision problems that we have, I was going to say that we see, and what kind of causes them? Maybe go through some of those.
Well, certainly macular degeneration tops the list in terms of diseases that affect a great number of individuals in the state of Wisconsin and around the world, actually, for which we have really limited ability to affect the course of the disease. And mm-hmm. we do have some treatments available now that help a subset of individuals perhaps see a little bit better or delay the course of the disease. But for the most part, we have a lot of individuals that just can't be helped. And we're working very hard in large teams of researchers to address big problems like this. Other issues that still plague us are diabetic retinopathy. Mm. And then there's issues that affect more the front of the eye. There's people who have corneal disease, people who are affected by various infections, trauma, that we all hope to affect with our research.
We have callers online with questions for you. Let's take a call. Lisa and Madison, your turn. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Lisa, are you there?
Oh, yes. You didn't say my name, so I didn't know it was me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't say it loud enough, I don't think.
Thanks. Oh, that's okay. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have two questions. The first is a small one. The second one's a big one. Lutein, is this a good thing to take for your eyes?
Oh, so we have... Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm going to oftentimes segue into the folks in our institute that are addressing these very issues. We have world-class researchers that are looking into that. We have Barb Lodi, Julie Maris. So we have folks that are specifically looking at these the idea of nutrition and your vision. So lutein does have a role. I think that, like a lot of supplements, that none of these things are panaceas. For the most part, if you have a good, healthy diet of yellow foods and vegetables and green leafy vegetables, you're going to get the majority of the nutrients that you need for a healthy healthy eyes and health and having a good visual function. There have been studies that have looked at it as an additional supplement for age-related macular degeneration, and those have been kind of on the fence, kind of equivocal. So I tell folks, good healthy diet, don't smoke, get exercise. Cycle for Sight's a great way to do that. If you have the means to supplement your diet with some of these vitamins, it may help. We're not exactly sure if it will, but they are costly too. So you have to weigh those things.
Probably not going to hurt anything.
Correct.
So okay. Well, thank you. My bigger question is this: I'm now 67 years old. When I was 57 in 2005, I was seeing. Things were wavy, and I ended up having a diagnosed with a macular pucker and had a
vitrectomy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Which, for the audience, is a removal of the jelly in the center of the eye.
Hmm. Okay. And then later that year, in November, 7 months later, I had a cataract removed in that same eye.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, 6 years later, in 2011, I was having problems with a cataract in my left eye, and so went in, and in the pre-surgery thing, they said, oh, looks like you've got a macular pucker in this eye also, even though I was having none of the symptoms, the wavy lines or whatever. So let's do a twofer and do both of them at one time. So I said, sounds good. We did. I was 62 years old at that time. Well, I came out of that surgery, and my eyes don't work together.
Okay.
I have to, one of my eye, my left eye, the lens on my glasses is all etched because, and we've tried everything. We've tried prisms and different prescriptions, and nothing works. So I have to, when I read without my glasses, I have to have a patch over my eye.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do we do about that, Dr. Gam?
Well, obviously, this is a very complex scenario, and it's not at all the norm. However, I think what it does is it brings to mind just how delicately our eyes are in register, not only within the one eye, but also between the two eyes. And it's something that I deal with quite a bit in my subspecialty, where I look at folks that have double vision quite often. So there's a lot of reasons behind the types of symptoms that you're describing. They could be due to a difficulty in the registration of visual images in one eye. So in other words, perhaps the second eye itself is having difficulties with the passage of light in and out of that eye in particular, or with your brain reconciling the images in the two eyes together. So obviously, this is something that we would do a very in-depth workup to be able to discern which one of those two scenarios it is. And it sounds like they're addressing it the way that people would. I mean, you look at prisms, things like that. Can I ask you, do the sizes of the two images that you get in each eye, are they the same size, or does it seem like the image in one eye is bigger than the other?
Well, I wouldn't say it's bigger. But the eye that has the problem now I have those wavy lines and things are off kilter and whatnot, which I did not have before.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of it's you're mitigating problems the best you possibly can, because that the jelly in the center of the eye that you had removed, it has sort of a pudding skin around it, which attaches to the retina. And so what happens is sometimes as you age, that jelly becomes more liquid, it pulls forward, kind of collapses like a jelly donut, and it leaves behind that pudding skin on the surface of the retina, sort of like cellophane. And then it will start to wrinkle and ball up. And when it does that, you get the wavy lines. And you really have to go in there and try and peel it off. But unfortunately, like a lot of things, peeling that off doesn't necessarily bring you back right where you were before. but rather just kind of damps things down. It's really individualized in terms of the response to the surgery. So, again, not able to give you anything more than to say that it sounds like you've got the right approach to your treatment at this point.
Mm. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Lisa. Dr. David Gamm, our guest today, who directs the McPherson Eye Research Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, talking about your eyes and my eyes. I've got some things to talk about as well. And you know what? Veronica Rickard has some things to talk about, too. This is our winter membership drive, and Veronica's joined us. Your support, that's the foundation of our budget. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your go-to place for great programs. And we're going to be back with our guests and talk some more about eyes in just a minute. But Veronica is with me to encourage you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to make your gift in support of the programs you count on. And we've had some pretty good success this morning already, Veronica.
That's right. And some good news from last hour, in fact. We heard from 30 new and returning members. That was 5 over the goal. So thank you so much for those pledges. And right now, this is a super cool hour to become a member. We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $3,500 this hour. And that generous match comes from current members, including 9XM Leadership Circle members Randy and Donna Krippner from Hilbert and Amy Gilliland from Madison. And that means, what this dollar-for-dollar match means, is that they're going to match every dollar that you give.
And it's their way of encouraging you to join in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio so you can double your support for the programs you love. I hope you'll give right now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
From 11 to 12:30 every weekday, we take a break from the news and from the politics. And on Larry's show, the focus is advice topics. It's the outdoors. It's eye health. It's interesting things going on at the university and the state and finances, all this stuff. And for example, today we've got Dr. David Gamm, the director of UW's Eye Research Institute.
And there's a not-so-secret ingredient to this recipe, and I think it's a winning recipe, and that's your support, listener support. You make the programs possible when you give at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
You know, you give to WPR because you want to support the programs that you love and that you listen to. And as an added incentive, we've got something special this winter membership drive, and it's the latest WPR T-shirt.
I haven't even looked at this T-shirt yet. I guess I've got it in front of me now. It's gray, kind of got a cool design. It's made in the USA, printed right here in Wisconsin, and it's yours when you give $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120. Ask for your T-shirt right now. Show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio when you make your pledge at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
I have many favorites. I like the music for casual listening, but when I want to pay attention, when I want to do intentional listening, then I like anything that Larry Mueller does. I do like Chapter a Day. In fact, I usually try to catch that twice, both early in the day and late at night. I like Saturday Morning Classics by Request, and I love the folk music program on Sunday evening. I like all the NPR offerings, especially Prairie Home Companion and All Things Considered. I listen all the time. I'm Lorraine Henning from Eau Claire, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for intellectual stimulation.
Lorraine, thank you so much. I hope you'll join Lorraine and make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552. I'm Larry Mueller with Veronica Rickard, and we're asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during our winter membership drive. And maybe your pledge is $5 a month, or maybe it's $100 a month. We really appreciate and count on your gift. Every gift helps.
It's so easy to support Wisconsin Public Radio, but really the easiest way is to become a sustainer. A sustaining membership is one that is ongoing. It comes either from your bank account or a credit or a debit card.
Because it automatically renews, you don't have to remember to renew every year. Some people give $5 a month. Maybe some give $15 or $20. The idea is to pick the amount that works for you, set it up at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552. And kind of sit back and enjoy the ease and convenience of supporting great radio.
You might not have thought of this, but everything that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, it's the result of thoughtful preparation. We do our homework so that you get the highest quality radio programs. You can show your commitment to this quality and commit now when you make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we really hope you'll contribute now. We have that dollar-for-dollar match in effect from current members, including 9XM Leadership Circle members Randy and Donna Krippner from Hilbert and also Amy Gilliland from Madison. Your gift of $50 turns into $100. Your $100 gift turns into $200. Take advantage of this match and double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now. In fact, if you give $1,000, we could double that as well. Do it right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Yeah, it really is a fantastic time to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can make that very first pledge. You're listening right now. Are you a WPR member? Well, supporting your public radio station, it's an investment that gives back. Whether it's the trustworthy news, whether it's the statewide conversations, inspiring music, advice like you hear all the time on Larry's show, we're here when you need us.
And after you've made your donation to WPR, another way you can help is by telling your friends and family. You know, you can do that too, can't they?
Give them a little nudge.
Give them a little nudge. Tell them to go ahead and go to WPR.org and make that contribution or phone 888-202-2552. And let your friends know how good it feels when you support that station that you enjoy each and every day.
Don't forget that dollar-for-dollar match still in effect right now. That goes up to $3,500. We don't want to leave any of that on the table. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR is going to go twice as far.
Give right now. Again, go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Taking a look at the health of your eyes today with Dr. David Gamm. He directs the McPherson Eye Research Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's also an associate professor in the Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Science. It's great to have him along to talk with us. He does has clinical practice in pediatric ophthalmology, and his research interest focuses on human retinal development and disease. And we've got this Cycle for Sight event coming up. And just to review that again, Dr. Gamm, it's coming up this
March 12th. And this is our fifth year, and we have four locations, three main ones, as we mentioned before, two on campus and one at Princeton Club West. And our website for that is cycleforsight, all one word, .wisc.edu. And you can also go to just the McPherson Eye Research Institute website, which is a good source of information for what we're doing here on campus, and that's vision.wisc.edu.
Yeah, and I think we have links to on our Facebook page to both, so that's great. You really do a broad range of eye research at the Institute.
I think one of the goals of the Institute is really not to tell people what to do here on campus, because everyone's brilliant and they have great expertise and resources, but rather we look around and we see there's pretty much nothing in terms of basic knowledge or types of diseases that someone or a group of people aren't addressing on campus or around the state. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important mm-hmm. to understand about our Institute too, and about how our state works, and that is our boundaries are not the boundaries of the University of Wisconsin-Madison mm-hmm. necessarily. There are people in other institutions that bring wonderful resources and expertise that we need as teams of researchers to attack these huge problems that have plagued us for decades. One person, one lab is not going to do it. Banding together and working together makes us more efficient, makes us more economical, but also makes us more impactful.
Yeah. Mary and Shano has a question for you, so let's go there. Mary, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, I'm calling about my right eye. There was a sudden onset of a large floater, mm-hmm. which looked brown instead of black, like the little specks I usually see. It's not in one spot, it's not set, but it won't go away.
Well, oh, So floaters, that's a big thing that we get an awful lot of, right? I mean, I get them too. So a couple of things. Are you either nearsighted, meaning that you wear glasses so you can see better at distance, or have you had cataract surgery or any other eye surgery?
Nearsighted.
You're nearsighted. Okay, and that's the most common group of individuals that get them. I'm nearsighted. I have floaters. I've had them for as long as I can remember. So what are floaters? So that jelly in the middle of the eye, I mentioned it with the last caller. It's a nice, like a lot of things as we get old, the stuff that starts off firm loses it. So it's initially like a very firm jello, but then over time with age, the center portion becomes more liquefied, something called sinuresis. And so as that central part becomes more liquefied, the little proteins and little molecules that make up that jelly glob together, and they form strings or balls, and they float around in that core liquefied area in the center of the eye. And that's what we call a floater, and it's key that it moves around. As you move your eyes, they tend to move with your eye, but not in perfect register. It just kind of floats around. In and of themselves, they're benign. They're just an indication of that aging process, which is accelerated in folks who have nearsightedness or who have had eye surgery. If you see a ton of them all at once, then it can be a sign of retinal tears or detachment. So that's important. So I want to get that out. Besides that, a large one that kind of comes on all of a sudden can sometimes be something we call a Weiss ring, which is where that jelly attaches to a particular part of the back of the eye called the optic nerve. And it's very adherent there. And when it pops off, it forms almost like a donut by itself, and then it'll start to crumple up, and it tends to float right over the center of your vision.
Hmm.
They change over time. They tend to go away. They're annoying, but for the most part, you don't have to do anything about them.
There we go.
They're benign.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
That'd be 10.
Unless you get a million of them, and then call your ophthalmologist.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Mary. How about Randy in Montello? Hi, Randy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I'm knocking on a door of 60 here, and I'm nearsighted. And this started occurring to for me in my early 40s, and it happened to me a few weeks ago. Is I get one of my eyes will just really dilate, and I seen someone a number of years ago about it, an eye doctor, and he didn't think it was an issue. But I'm just wondering if that's anything I should be concerned about. It, like I said, it just happened to me a couple of weeks ago here again.
Mm-hmm.
And I never know when it's going to happen. I mean, there's no pain. I can't really drive or work when it happens because it's a weird, I don't even know how to describe it. But
well, I'm going to push you on the description part of it a little bit. Do you get blurry? Does that eye get blurry?
Well, I don't know how it just everything seems like it's really bright, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
It's hard to focus. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it is hard to focus because there's a couple of different things to think about here. And one is the dilation tied into your ability to focus, because in many respects the part of your nervous system that handles whether your pupil's big or small also tends to feed into whether your lens will focus properly. So you can sometimes get a handle at what's going on by whether those two are operating together or if they're dissociated or apart from one another. One quick question that get out of the way. You aren't by any chance, you don't use like a seasickness patch, or you don't use inhalers for asthma, things like that?
No.
Okay.
No.
And when it does, the reason I say that is because a lot of these types of medications, if you get it on your finger, you rub your eye, you can dilate one of your eyes, and it's not uncommon that it's just a chemical reaction. But then that usually lasts a long time. So when this occurs, how long do you notice that the pupils are different size and you have this funny thing?
I would say anywhere from maybe 3 to 5 minutes, maybe.
Oh, so it's very quick.
I'm guessing here. I'm really not sure.
Okay. All right. And do you get a headache? Do you get a headache with it at all?
No headaches. No.
Okay. Because migraines can do this too. So
different types of migraines. Okay.
Yeah. Well, there are. You know, I have to say that I get this every once in a while. This comes across us our clinics, and oftentimes it's all in retrospect because they're not walking in with the problem. So you're basically trying to piece things together. In general, it's benign as long as it's transient. There are things that if it hangs around and doesn't go away, that we definitely have to watch out for. That can be ominous. But if it's transient, it oftentimes we're chalking it up to what we call ocular migraines, where it's just transient changes in the balance of nervous input to, from one eye to the other. And for the most part, again, benign, as long as it goes away in short order.
Okay. When you say transient, what do you mean by that? I'm not quite clear on
up to hours. I mean, you can have it last for minutes to hours. I mean, if it's going on, and if it's associated with anything else, like in, you know, any sort of neurologic changes, then that should be something that that's you call right away about. But in and of itself, isolated with no other symptoms like you're talking about, except maybe a little bit of blurriness, and it does go away in a time frame of minutes to hours, you're probably fine. And if you have any other questions, you can give a call and just ask your primary care doctor and ultimately an ophthalmologist if they get you in contact with one.
All right, thanks, Randy, for calling. Holly in Wausau, it's. Let's see if we can go to you next. Hi, Holly. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have a question. My mom, she's not quite 63 years old. She's pretty healthy and active. She has retinitis pigmentosa.
Mm-hmm.
She also had cataracts in both her eyes, and then she had lenses put in, one in 1999 and then one in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of wondering if there's any cure or treatment for the retinitis?
This is a very large area of focus at the Institute, and actually for me as well. So for those who need a little bit of a primer on retinitis pigmentosa, it's actually a catch-all term. It encompasses probably up to 100 different genetic mutations, all of which lead to a slow deterioration of vision based upon degeneration within the retina itself, which is kind of the wallpaper in the back of your eye that senses light and is really a part of the brain. And unfortunately, it tends to affect people when they're very young or in their teenage years, and then you have this inexorable loss of vision starting from the outside portion of your visual field. And then ultimately can affect central vision too. Runs in families, although it can be just isolated in families as well. And this is one of the situations where there's nothing really that has been available for these individuals. And I see them as children, and it can be devastating to those patients and their families. So this is a huge focus of what we have here. And so the answer is yes. And I can go into more detail on this, but I, for instance, am a stem cell researcher, and so we use what are called induced pluripotent stem cells to understand these diseases and also develop therapies for them. And we're rapidly approaching a time when we will be trying to replace cells that are degenerated or lost in the course of retinitis pigmentosa or macular degeneration. There are gene therapies that are being developed and even gene repair, going in and trying to go inside the cells before they die and trying to correct the gene defect so that they don't undergo that type of a degeneration. In your mom's case, since she's already older and has already suffered quite a bit of loss of the light-sensing cells or photoreceptors in her retina, she would require either a bypass or a retinal chip or something like that, or a replacement of those cells. And we really are here at the University of Wisconsin on the forefront of that technology, and we are rapidly moving towards even clinical trials.
That's really cool. And that's on a lot of that information would be on your McPherson Institute website, I would.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I would guess as well. So, Holly, thank you so much. I'd urge you to take a look at the website to learn what else is going on or for a little more in-depth information about it. As Dr. David Gammar, I guess, isn't he great? He does such a wonderful job answering questions for you and for me. I really enjoy having him on the show. Also enjoy having Veronica Rickard stop by. She comes by, every 15 minutes or so to talk with us.
I'm in and out.
She's kind of in and out a little bit. But she's here to help me talk to you about the fact that we count on you to help us during our fun drive. And we come by every so often, a few times a year. WPR counts on you to keep our discussions going on the air. Give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And it's an especially fantastic hour to give to Wisconsin Public Radio because we've got a dollar-for-dollar match. It's in effect right now, up to $3,500. And that comes from 9XM Leadership Circle members Randy and Donna Krippner from Hilbert. and Amy Gilliland from Madison, and they will be doubling every dollar that you give this hour. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. So double the impact of your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'll bet you've been enjoying this conversation today with Dr. David Gamm, who directs the McPherson Eye Research Institute at the UW-Madison. This is a great example of the interesting and substantial conversations that we have on this show.
So think about that, about all the advice that you get, all the entertainment, and then take a few minutes to make this program and many more programs possible. Just choose a gift amount that works for you, and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Takes just a couple of minutes of your time. You tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. And you can give it in a lump sum or maybe become a monthly sustainer. No matter how you choose to give or how much you give, use the next few minutes to support the station you count on. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
You know, WPR, it's been around for a long time, and that's because we're committed to quality. And that quality, it's possible thanks to you. Listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget.
Your contribution makes this program possible and so many others as well. You're part of the quality you hear every day on WPR when you donate at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the hosts and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
Pledge at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Veronica Rickard asking for your support of WPR during this winter membership drive. And maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
WPR is a powerful resource that we've all created together. It's a joint effort. The programs on the station have an impact all over the state and far beyond the state, too.
Absolutely. And when you make your gift at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552, you're really participating in something amazing, I think. Give now. Be part of that statewide music, news, and talk that makes WPR great.
And don't forget, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now on the first day of the pledge drive. This is coming from current members, including 9XM Leadership Circle members Randy and Donna Krippner from Hilbert and Amy Gilliland from Madison. And how it works is that you decide, say, to pledge $50. Well, that gets doubled. That turns into $100. If you decide to pledge $100, it turns into $200. It's kind of a little bit of magic there. So take advantage of that match right now and double your support for WPR programs when you give right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
At WPR, we have a core group of supporters who continue to give, and they give generously every year. They willingly contribute because they depend on this vital resource. Maybe you rely on WPR, too, and for whatever reason, you've never given. I can't believe it, but there are some people out there.
It happens when we're here to tell you that WPR relies on new members, people like you, to grow and to keep the high-quality programs on the air. So today's the day. Let's just say that. Today's the day that you decide to show your support, to become a WPR member at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and tell us that you want to become a new member. Your gift of any amount at all, is all that it takes.
Maybe a dollar a day is the right amount for your Wisconsin Public Radio listening. When you think about it, a dollar a day is a great value. It's less than a cup of coffee or a soda. Or a day of cell phone service, for sure.
Right. I mean, a dollar a day comes out to $30 a month. You can set that up as a monthly transfer from your bank account or your credit card, whatever feels convenient for you. Make your pledge right now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
We don't want to lose this. This pledge drive, we're offering something really special in addition to the dollar-for-dollar match right now. Show your support with a $120 gift, a one-time gift, or maybe it's $10 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And we will send you one of our WPR T-shirts, which, you know what? It's going to cost me another $120. Every time we have a new shirt or a new mug.
Well, they're always cool, right?
Well,
we were looking at
cool.
the design, and this is a really kind of a neat one. It's the one, it was on the water bottle, if you remember that last time. It's got the little radio vibe to it. But the important thing is that you contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio. Do it now. Dollar for dollar match on the table. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for that pledge.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Dr. David Gamm, who directs the McPherson Eye Research Institute at UW-Madison. And he's been doing a great job here to answering your questions about vision problems. And we haven't gotten into blindness yet. I certainly want to get into that as well. And we've also talked about the Cycle for Sight event that's coming up. And you know what, Dr. Gamm, I know there are actually, we're talking about blindness, we will get to talk about blindness, but there are some blind folks who are participating in the Cycle for Sight event, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So one of the reasons why we have a cycling event and a stationary cycling event, although you can also walk, is because we want it to be available for people of all abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually quite blessed in this state to have the Wisconsin Council for the Blind and Visually Impaired, which is centered here in Madison, which is a wonderful organization that brings together individuals with very low vision or blindness. And we have a number of teams of riders who are blind for various reasons. And they're some of our strongest advocates, as you might imagine. And they're also hilarious. They're a great group of folks. I think in almost every one of the sessions, we have at least one team of riders who have vision problems. And they keep it very light.
So. Wonderful. Well, Roman in Genoa City has a question. Roman, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Larry, for taking my call and Dr. Gamm. I suffer from serpiginous.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real rare disease, you probably
yeah,
know.
It's inflammatory, right? It's
the only good thing about it is it's really slow. I've had it for like 7 years, and up to like 5 years ago I was driving. So now mm-hmm. it's just I can't see the people's eyes, you know, what mm-hmm. color they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I see, you know, a lot of forms and everything. And I was just wondering, because I can't read the paper, or I just want to know if there's anything coming down the pipeline, hopefully.
Sure. Okay. I'm going to step back a little bit because a lot of individual problems that lead to blindness might not be able to... What was that?
Excuse me. Yeah. They gave me tubercular medicine because I was positive for tuberculosis. And
okay.
I took that for a year, but... That didn't, I'm positive for tuberculosis. I have it, you know, I'm
right.
supposed to disease, but I don't have tuberculosis. Well,
and they may have thought that that could have been a contributing factor, and they just wanted to make sure all their bases were covered.
Mm-hmm.
But to broaden, and I will get to your particular issue, serpiginous, in just a second, but to broaden the approach, it comes down to, where, when, why, and how. So if you have low vision or you have a vision problem, where is it located? So it could be anywhere from the front of the eye. If you have a corneal ulceration, could be a retinal problem, could be a brain problem, because we actually see with our brains. How long are you along that disease course? So is this something that just happened, or have you had it for 20 years? Why? You know, why does it occur? And that's a huge part about what we do at the Institute. We try to understand the basis for these diseases so that we can attack them intelligently. And then how? How are we going to actually combat these problems? So getting to your situation, you've had this now for a period of time. It's gotten worse over that time, too. And so you're probably looking at some chronic damage as well as some maybe acute damage that occurs from year to year or time to time. So the chronic damage, with what happens with that is it causes kind of a rearrangement of the different cells within the retina, and sometimes can cause them to either be dysfunctional, so that they're there, but they don't work quite right, or they actually degenerate. So in that case, in that kind of extreme end of the therapeutic spectrum, we actually have to try to either bypass the cells that aren't working anymore or replace them. And so, yes, there is work that's being done, but that's difficult. It's always easier to keep what you've got than replace what you've lost,
yeah.
Especially when you're talking about things that are associated with the brain, as opposed to, you know, cartilage or something that might be more easily replaced with synthetic items. And then there's that issue, and yes, we're working on that, but it's a higher bar. So we're closing in on the ability to replace cells that have been lost during the course of disease, but it's sort of like the development of the computer, right? I mean, somebody had to have a really basic computer and play Pong, and then now we have supercomputers. And so taking those initial steps, making sure that what we're doing is safe is very important. Get critical information from that, refine it, and then get a version 2.0, 3.0, 5.0. And then there's the issue of trying to understand what's underlying the disease, in your case, serpiginous, so that we can prevent the next little episode that causes it to just to ding a little bit more and to lower your vision a little bit more. And that could be the use of things that we're very familiar with, like corticosteroids, drops. And so we're developing those types of pharmacologic therapies that are easier to apply in the short term. Here at the University of Wisconsin, too. So I assume you have a retina specialist that you're seeing and that you've been treated with eye drops and various other treatments as well along the way, which may very well have served to slow the disease down.
I stopped going. After like 5 or 6 years, and I just got, you know, really depressed, and I just said, hell with it. I haven't seen anybody for 3-4 years, but I just... wanted to know. I figure maybe, you know, something's coming. You know, friends are saying that they have, you know, new technology coming.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. You definitely should make an appointment to see a retina specialist either near you or here at the University of Wisconsin. Again, I'm not promising that we have, you know, miracle cures, but changes occur and advancements occur on all different levels in terms of therapeutics. So steroids get better. So, you know, you might have taken a drop before that really didn't do much. Well, there are new categories and classifications of those medications that are available now. Surgical approaches change. And then experimental therapies also progress. And even in situations where we can't say, hey, here's something you can take right now, there's something to be, you mentioned the depression aspect of it, and that's very, very real. And fighting that on your own and without the kind of at least periodic, therapeutic talks that you can get from folks who are on the cutting edge of the research and the clinical trials that are going on, it kind of keeps you in touch with what's going on and tells you that you're not alone, that you're not forgotten, that this isn't something that people have just said, you know what, we're never going to fix that. Go home, do what you can, and, you know, don't bother me anymore. That's certainly not the attitude that any of us have. We live in a wonderful period of time where we're seeing great advancements in science and in clinics. And while we can't cure everybody or give treatments to everybody, we certainly can tell you the state of the research where it's at right now. And there's quite a bit of hope for the future for folks like yourself.
And thanks a lot, Roman, for calling. And good luck. Appreciate your call very much. I want to give Mary in the great state of Iowa a chance to join in. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a question. My grandson, who's he's about 2 years, 9 months, was diagnosed with myopia, I guess, nearsightedness, and he got glasses less than a year ago. And at that time, when they checked him, they figured he could only see 10 feet out. And now they're almost doubling the prescription. Is this going to be something that leads to blindness shortly?
Well, first of all, how did he get picked up? How did he actually get in to get his eyes checked in the first place?
Because for one thing, most kids will focus or watch TV. I mean, he could always do puzzles and he loved books, but they were all close. But he wouldn't even pay attention to a television.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
And did your grandson?
Yes.
Okay, and so did your grandson see a pediatric ophthalmologist, someone who specializes in seeing children? Because that's important, too.
Okay, I I would assume so. His mother is a nurse.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. But yeah. That's important, too, because you want to make sure that you're getting an accurate glasses prescription. And there's a very special way to do that when you approach children that it's different than adults. You know, kids are not little mini adults. We all know that. But in particular, their eyes are not the same as adult eyes in many different ways. So first of all, it's important for a pediatric eye specialist, ophthalmologist, to be able to evaluate your grandson. And yes, we do see increases in as the eyes grow and you're and kids undergo growth spurts, we can see significant changes in prescriptions. First of all, you want to make sure that it's not related to anything else that might be of concern. There are some disorders that are related to very high prescriptions in terms of nearsightedness. They're rare, but you want to rule those out. And then there are other things that a lot of it's genetics. So sometimes you just can't do anything about it. You know, for all the best interventions you possibly can think of, and they're just destined to be very nearsighted. There has been some research recently, a lot of it coming out of Asia, that suggests that being outdoors and so having some spending time outdoors and playing, actually that exposure to sunlight may be important in reducing the ultimate level of nearsightedness that you might attain. It's not going to get rid of it, but it can reduce the overall level. And then there's some newer research to look at affecting the way that the eye focuses that may curb some nearsightedness, but those are still quite controversial at this time. So for the most part, it's just staying on top of it, having an accurate pair of glasses to make sure that they're not too strong, because that can be detrimental to a child as well.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling, Mary. Appreciate it. Dr. David Gamm, our guest today, as we talk about our eyes with him. Veronica Rickert's got another conversation for us right now. She joins us once again. During our winter membership drive, you rely on WPR for information, for in-depth discussions, and we rely on you to keep programs like this one going. And your gift right now, any amount, makes a big difference at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
And an exciting time to make a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, because we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now that goes up to $3,500. And
we haven't met that yet.
There is about $1,000 still on the table, still to go. This dollar-for-dollar match is possible because of 9XM Leadership Circle members Randy and Donna Krippner from Hilbert and Amy Gilliland from Madison. They're going to double every dollar that you decide to give. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. So double the impact of your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thinking about some of our regular guests, Sandy Sawchuk, who helps us with our pets. We got Scott Craven, who talks about wildlife and wildlife sightings. Our weather guy, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Our bird guy, Bill Volkert.
That's right. These are people you kind of feel like you know, right? They're friends, and they talk about things that are near and dear to your heart, and they give you advice, and they give you ideas. And because you've come to trust and appreciate these guests, support the program with your dollars. It's easy. You just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this membership drive, you can choose the WPR T-shirt as your thank you gift for your pledge of $10 a month, or maybe a one-time gift of $120. That's what I'm going to do. It's a cotton and printed right here in Wisconsin.
Nice.
Yeah, very nice. Your pledge supports the programs, and you'll love the T-shirt, and I hope you'll give right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
I became a sustaining member because I listened to WPR throughout the day. It's in my car, it's in my home. I know that there is always a topic of interest that I'll enjoy hearing. I like being a sustainer because I'm listening to Wisconsin Public Radio all the time anyway, and I would rather not have to worry about responding and making an extra phone call or sending in the envelope that gets mailed to me. I just like knowing that my money is there and will be supporting Wisconsin Public Radio for years to come. I would say become a sustaining member because it's so very easy. Do it today, you'll be glad that you did. I'm Nancy from New Berlin, Wisconsin. I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
Nancy, thank you so much. And thank you if you've already given. If you haven't, now's the time to do it. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your pledge. I'm Larry Mueller with Veronica Rickert asking for your support and your gift, any amount, $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose. That's the right amount, and time is fleeting here on our match.
That's right. We've got a dollar-for-dollar match in effect for up to $3,500. We've got still about...
$700.
$700 on the table, so we got to get there with your help. That's how we do it. If you can, while you make that pledge, share your passion for WPR by becoming a member of the 9XM Leadership Circle with your pledge of $100 a month or more. That would get us to the challenge goal. Pretty handily. We rely on member support, excuse me, your support to make great radio.
Gifts of $100 a month, $1,200 a year are important for our future. We have many people who actually are in a position to be able to do that. Help us stay strong and continue to grow with that leadership gift at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
Now, one listener made their donation and they said, we could live without WPR, but we sure wouldn't want to. Well, maybe you feel that same way, that listening to WPR makes your life better.
Whether it's keeping up with the news, or maybe it's enjoying music, or the laughs you get from the weekend shows, or the fascinating discussions on the Ideas Network, there's always something good to listen to.
Because WPR makes your life better, help fund it, help pay for it, help keep it going. Your pledge of support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's so important.
We only have a couple of minutes left on this dollar-for-dollar match right now. It's still about $600 to go. This is a 9XM Leadership Circle gift from members Randy and Donna Krippner and from Hilbert and Amy Gilliland from Madison. So if you've been thinking about it, here's your chance. Still about $500 to go to reach that goal. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, or that $100 turns into a $200 gift. So take advantage of it right now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
And what about joining Nick from Platteville, who says, I feel that it's time for me to contribute. I love WPR. Nick stepped up, became a member, helped us meet that challenge goal amount of $3,500. Now you do your part. You're listening. Make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
About $450 to go, and we only have a minute or two here to do it. So if you've been thinking about it, now's the time to not think anymore, and go ahead and act. You can go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Make your contribution. We're going to be taking a look at the news now, but still time. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your pledge. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. David Gamm, directs the McPherson Eye Research Institute at UW, also an associate professor in the Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Science, and talking with him about, well, he's trying to raise awareness, I think, a little bit about vision problems and blindness and answering your questions. Also talking about the cycle for sight that's coming up on March 12th. And Dr. Gamm, that just looks like a lot of fun, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, it is. And you can go as hard or as soft as you want to. You don't, it's again for all ages, all abilities. And the hardest part is sometimes cycling while you're laughing. So that's.
And I'm looking at the glasses. I have a poster in front of me, and I'm looking at some of the glasses, the outside glasses. People are wearing it. You know, you can tell, okay, this is a group that's having a lot of fun.
Yeah, but you get a sweat going if you want to.
Oh, yeah. For sure. For sure. So anyway, cycleforsight.wisc.edu, that's the place to go if you want to get signed up or to learn some more. Great place to go. We have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So there you go. Get involved. Darlene in Iron Ridge has something for us next. Darlene, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you, and good afternoon. I'm 77. About 8 years ago, I was diagnosed with extreme dry eye. I was prescribed Restasis, which I used for over a year. It did not work. My eyes were still hurting very much, so I had two plugs put in each eye. I didn't know there was that many holes in your eye. I had two plugs put in each eye, which pretty much 95% got better. They don't water anymore. They don't hurt. My biggest problem right now is at night, especially after I've been on a computer for maybe an hour or 2 hours, my right eye gets like dark gray that I can't see that very good. But and besides that problem, sometimes my eyes burn unbearably, and I put eye drops in, which does not help at all. What I do for that is I get an ice cube and wrap it in a tissue or a towel and hold it against my eye, which takes some of that fierce burning away. I'm wondering if there's anything else I can do to help my eyes.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm glad that the plugs are helping you. I think you, when you think about your tears and how your eye gets lubricated, it's like a sink, right? You got a faucet and you got a drain. So Restasis helps with the faucet, and then the plugs are stopping up the drain. And sometimes you have to use the two. So my first question whenever I talk to folks about dry eye is that when you say that when you're on the computer for a good period of time, it really starts to hurt unbearably. Well, when you read or when you watch TV or on your computer, you blink less. So your eyes dry out faster. Are you using the drops before and during your computer time, or are you kind of waiting until they start to hurt before you put the drops in?
Probably wait until it starts to hurt.
Okay, yeah. There's your problem. So this is the same thing. Let's say you're gardening all morning, right? If you just garden for hours and you get super thirsty, you can drink a gallon of water and you're still kind of thirsty. But if you drink a little along the way, you don't get thirsty and you stay good. You don't get a headache and you feel good. So the key is to put those drops right by your computer screen. Put them in before you start, and every 10, 15, 20 minutes, put a drop in there. If you wait till it starts to sting, actually, when you put the drops in, they're just going to sting a little bit more.
More.
Yeah. And then if you're just using drops and you have a really bad day, before you go to bed, use a lubricating ointment, something called Lacrolube, and there are generic forms you can get as well. And just kind of put a little bit of a rice grain amount of that salve or that ointment in your eye, and it'll blur your vision, but you're going to bed anyway. And that can really help you recover while you sleep.
There we go. Thanks so much for joining us, Darlene. John in Wausau has something as well. John, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. Good afternoon, Dr. Gamm and Larry.
Hello.
I have two questions. I don't know if they're related or not, but the first one is I was diagnosed with presumed ocular histoplasmosis, mm-hmm. and I also have photophobia, and I have dimmers on all my lights, mm-hmm. and bright light seems to really freak me out, and I'm wondering if they're related.
Well, they could be. I think, again, photophobia, which means light sensitivity, so a lot of times we put big old words onto things and makes it sound like we know what we're talking about or try to confuse people. But again, it's not really a diagnosis. It's sort of like saying my knee aches. There's reasons why your knee aches, but the actual symptom that you have, the light sensitivity or photophobia, is not a diagnosis in and of itself. And it could be caused by problems on the cornea, on the front of the eye. It can be caused by problems with your size of your pupil. And oftentimes it can be caused by problems with the retina, which is what you have. So POHS, or presumed ocular histoplasmosis, where you have these little kind of punched out lesions in the retina. And that can cause a difference in the sensitivity of the retina itself. And so it is possible that that's the cause. We know, for instance, there are certain types of macular disorders called cone dystrophies where people will have photophobia or light sensitivity. And sometimes it's not necessarily light sensitivity, like it makes your eyes hurt, but people describe being dazzled so that they just can't handle the light that other people can. And not because it hurts their eyes, but because they just don't see well. Is that more your situation?
Well, I'm not really sure, but let's put it this way. If somebody turns the dimmer up in the house all the way up and I turn the light on, I immediately freak out. It almost seems psychological to me, but it seems like it's going through some sort of filter that's causing it, like my eye.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, freak out isn't an ICD-9 code yet or ICD-10 code yet, but what I get is that you're not getting pain from it. And so this is what this is my hand wave for you this afternoon. So bright light is handled by a particular type of light sensitive cell called a cone. And cones, they handle color vision and bright light situations. Rods are low light photoreceptors or light sensitive cells. And so in dim light, you can rely more on rods And but when you turn up the light, those rods get swamped out, and all of a sudden they don't have really a good job to do anymore. And so you might very well be, because of the POHS, the histoplasmosis, more reliant on your rods than the average person walking around. So you require lower light to recruit those cells that most of us in bright light don't need.
As
for my state of mind, or, you know, if I'm always around dark light, people tell me that it's bad. It can cause mood disorders and things like that.
Well, yeah, seasonal affective disorder. Well, yes, I think every once in a while get some sun on your face. But for the most part, no need to freak out about that.
All right. There we go. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Julia in Mondovi, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I have two questions, one related to myself and then one for my son. But when my son was about 3 months old, he was diagnosed, well, not diagnosed, but the pediatrician noticed his eyes were moving unusually. So we took him to the over in Minneapolis area to the university hospital there for a comprehensive eye exam, as much as you could do on an infant. When he was diagnosed,
you could do a lot, actually.
Yeah, undeveloped retina and congenital nystagmus. Mm-hmm. And he is now 36, or going to be 36. And I kind of wonder if there's anything else that could be done, you know, or if there's anything new coming down, you know, like treatments or studies or anything. He is considered legally blind. It's borderline, but he can't drive. But he does. He is farsighted too, but he can see things, you know, like computer and you know, TV and things like that. So he does work. But I worry as he gets older that, you know, this probably will affect his employment more.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, nystagmus is it's congenital nystagmus. Congenital meaning that he was born with it. Nystagmus is that kind of rapid to and fro movement back and forth of the eye. And there's two reasons why you can have that kind of unstable movement of the eye. One is that it's just the wiring is wrong. So those individuals generally have pretty good vision. They just it's a little blurrier than the rest of us, but the eye moves back and forth, and sometimes they adopt a certain head position to slow it down. And then there's a sensory nystagmus, where there's something wrong with how the eye was made that then leads to an instability in the movement of the eye. So it's a chicken or the egg sort of thing. So it actually sounds to me like it's the latter for your son, in that the retina wasn't properly developed, and so it didn't actually, you know, lock in. So, you know, the relationship between the eye and the brain didn't quite lock in, and so you have this movement back and forth. There's a lot of different things that can cause that, albinism, achromatopsia. So first and foremost, when we see that in the clinic, is we want to get to the bottom of why that is. And so it doesn't sound like he has another diagnosis that can could explain the underdeveloped retina. Is that true?
Right. Nobody had ever said anything.
Okay.
At any of the appointments that we've, you know, had ever had him to.
Okay.
But that's important in terms of treatments, too, because you want to make sure somebody's really looked hard for the possibility for an underlying, say, genetic diagnosis, because there are certain disorders, say, achromatopsia, which is a fancy word, but it's a genetic disease that can cause nystagmus and an underdeveloped retina at birth, and that is quickly going towards a gene therapy trial right now. So, again, it's kind of lumping and splitting. All nystagmus isn't the same, and if the more you understand about your particular type of disorder, the more you can understand what bucket in terms of therapy you might fit in. Mm. If there's no other genetic underlying disorder that anyone can uncover, then it may be what we call just foveal hypoplasia, where just the center portion of the retina, which is the most important part, doesn't develop the normal kind of depression or cup-like shape that it should. And in that situation, that's going to be a little more difficult to fix, because going in and reshaping the retina, it really isn't something that we know how to do. But there is research going on right now that understands how that cup is actually formed in the first place, and whether or not we can turn back the hands of time and try to recreate that after you're already an adult is something that people are working on. This was science fiction many, many years ago, but there are laboratories that are actually working on that. It's just not something we have around the corner.
And, Julia, thank you so much for calling. I want to give Kathy in La Crosse a chance to join us. Hi, Kathy. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Doc. I have a couple of questions as well. I have a little bit of a complicated past. My left eye never could see. My right eye, I had about 40% vision until I was about 7. Then my cell walls in the back of my eye burst and scarred my retinas. So then I lost the majority of my sight. Then I had two different kinds of cancer. I had a retinoblastoma that got diagnosed when I was 18. I got a prosthetic eye in that side, and then I had a schwannoma in the optic nerve on the right side and had that replaced. My question is there anything coming down the pipe that might be able to help with my particular disorder? And my second question would be, I know a lot of blind people down in the Madison area. I lived down there for probably about 10 years, and right when I was coming up to La Crosse, I was hearing about the UW conducting work on something called the brain port, and especially useful for people that did see it when they were younger. I was wondering what you knew.
Well, certainly. Well, first of all, just a couple of things. As is often the case when you're dealing with complex issues like you have, and yours is complex. For instance, you mentioned retinoblastoma at 18. Essentially, you're not going to see retinoblastoma at 18. That's something you see when you're very young. If it goes to 18, generally, that's fatal. So there may be a little disconnect in terms of what the actual tumor name is, but I think the more important aspect of it is there was something that was off right in the very beginning, and then you developed some secondary problems later on. So let's just kind of say that there's a lot of stuff here, and it may very well be outside of the range of some of the therapies that are around the corner. But this is a good segue into what you talked about with the brain port. So the brain port was actually developed by a group that was part of the McPherson Eye Research Institute, and now it's a company. And so what it does is it's an example of how you can take folks where their eyes aren't working, and they probably aren't going to be working anytime soon. We're working on it, but it's not going to be right around the corner. So is there a way to get another part of your body to almost take the place of your eyes? So in the case of the brain port, what you have is something that you put inside your mouth, and your tongue has exquisite sensitivity to it, what we call two-point discrimination. And so there's a camera that basically portrays the outside world onto the surface of your tongue. And so, you know, if there's a person to your right, you feel it on the right side of your tongue, and so on and so forth. The cool part about this is that when they do brain studies on patients who are learning to use these devices, and these are generally folks that are completely blind, they actually see that at first the parts of the brain that deal with touch or sensation light up when they're using the brain port or these sort of sensory type low vision devices. But over time, as they get used to them, areas of the visual cortex where your brain normally uses vision or incorporates visual input start to light up. So you actually can learn, you know, an old dog can learn a new trick, and you can start using other parts of your brain and incorporate sensation not from your eyes but from touch, and learn to maneuver better in your environment.
Amazing. Thank you so much for calling, Kathy. We've talked about that research on the show in the past, and it's really some fascinating, fascinating stuff. Dr. David Gamm, our guest today, with the McPherson Eye Research Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, kind of along with us today, and not only to talk about vision, but to remind us about Saturday, March 12th, the Cycle for Sight from 8 to 1 p.m., go to cycleforsight.wisc.edu to learn more about it. And joining me right now, Veronica Rickard. And our goal is to keep bringing you shows like today's with Dr. David Gamm. Your support makes that happen. I hope you'll give right now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and we did very well in our first hour.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to come back in and see that. We heard from 33 members. We want to thank you for those gifts, but maybe even more importantly, we exceeded the max for our dollar-for-dollar match. We were looking for $3,500. That was what was given by some generous members of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we met that and blew past it. So thank you so much, and our goal now is to get 15 pledges.
So support the nation, the station you love, and help us meet our goal when you give right now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
And you've been enjoying the conversation today with Dr. David Gamm. And this is an example of the interesting, important, and very helpful conversations that Larry has all the time on his show.
So I hope you'll take a few minutes right now to make this program and many more programs possible. Choose a gift that works for you, and then go ahead and make your pledge at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
Here's the sweet part of this. You get to decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge matters, and every pledge helps pay for the programs that you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. And during this drive, you can ask for your very own WPR t-shirt when you decide to pledge $10 a month.
It's the same design on the shirt as the water bottle, the WPR water bottle, which is my daughter's favorite bottle. I should have gotten two of those bottles. She glommed onto it, and so, but I'm going to get the T-shirt, so that's what I'm going to do. This is really kind of a new spin on a classic T-shirt that we've had. It's a gray cotton T-shirt with circular WPR design printed right here in Wisconsin. So ask for your T-shirt when you give $10 a month, or just do the, like me, I'm going to do a one-time gift of $120 at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I'm Barbara Gilmore from Port Washington, Wisconsin. I'm a member of the board of the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio to engage both with fellow listeners and experts in their fields on the talk shows. I listen to WPR to savor the thrill of discovery, whether it's about an event, a place, or an idea, here in Wisconsin or around the world.
You can join in right now. Make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or phoning 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Veronica Rickard asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. And whether your gift is $5 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
Maybe you're interested in playing a larger role in support of Wisconsin Public Radio. We hear from a lot of people who say they listen day in, day out, every single day. Well, maybe then think about the 9XM Leadership Circle. The 9XM Leadership Circle is a growing group of listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support WPR programs.
Leadership Circle members want to make sure public radio programming is going to be here today and tomorrow for everybody who listens, for all people who listen. If you'd like to increase your support to WPR and maybe join that 9XM Leadership Circle, you can do it. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And because you have a strong sense of what it means to be from Wisconsin, chances are that Wisconsin Public Radio plays an important role in your sense of identity. We serve the entire state.
We're looking for, what are we looking for, seven more pledges?
Seven more pledges to go to meet our goal.
Meet our goal, yeah. So you can do it right now. Help pay for the Larry Mueller Show with your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
WPR, it's your daily companion. We're on the air 24 hours a day, whether you're at home, maybe you're driving in the car, you're cooking dinner, you're relaxing, or you're concentrating, there we are with you.
And like a good companion, you count on us for accurate news, for great music, and intelligent conversation. We, in turn, count on you to support what you hear. That's how public radio works. So give now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
It's a good time to take stock and think about what's important to you. Friends and family and hobbies, these are things you invest in. You invest your time, and sometimes you also invest your money. Giving to what's important to you, it makes a difference in your life, and it makes you feel good, too.
Together, we make an impact on our community, so make your difference today with a gift of whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org. Or phone 888-202-2552.
Another thing you might want to check out, find out if your employer will match your donation to Wisconsin Public Radio. You can pledge now and then ask your human resources department the next time you get a chance.
And sometimes even retired employees can qualify for employer matches. So pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 and find out if you can get your pledge doubled.
Now, if you already renew by mail or make ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer, a big thank you. Listeners who renew and monthly sustainers are the backbone of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You know, here we are nearing the end of the show, and we have to go away in about 30 seconds or so. I want to ask, first I want to thank you for everyone who's contributed. Please, thank you so much for your contribution. But if you haven't contributed yet, help us meet this goal right now. You can do it with a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. That's go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Only take you a couple of minutes and you'll be doing so much to help our programming here at Wisconsin Public Radio. And thanks so much for your contribution. Again, WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.